Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Thanks for hooking up and hanging with me here on this Friday afternoon. Looking forward to the weekend, as we always do on Friday. We live, you know what, I think we live our lives 2 days at a time. Those intervening 5 days from Monday through Friday, that's just to get us to those 2 days that we really relish. So we have Congressman Adam Smith. I like this. He is going to the Pentagon saying, you know what we need to do? We need to change what is defined as a spouse for the military so that we can include same-sex couples. Because, yeah, we've gotten rid of the don't ask, don't tell, but that doesn't mean that same-sex couples in the military get the same benefits as straight couples. So big gap there in this marriage equality part. And six states already have marriage equality, same-sex marriage. And it also doesn't include the District of Columbia is another one. And as we all know, once we defeat this referendum in November, then Washington State will become the seventh state in the United States. And I think Maryland is also going through something like that. Anyway, Congressman Adam Smith joins me here on Newsline PM this afternoon. How are you there, sir?
I'm doing well, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
Very much appreciate your being here. So you're going to have to climb up some hills on this one, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, you know, the House Republican majority is going to be hostile to this idea, though I do make the argument that, you know, if we have any respect for states' rights, once a state has decided what a spouse legally is, and in this case they're allowing, you know, marriage equality, same-sex marriage, then, you know, the federal government ought to recognize that state law, and that's what we're asking here, is to make sure that the definition of spouse is the definition of spouse, including same-sex marriages that have been legalized in, as you mentioned, six states plus the District of Columbia, and hopefully soon, state of Washington. So, but you got to start. I mean, when we first started trying to repeal "Don't Ask, Don't Tell," we didn't have a very friendly environment either. But you keep plugging away, and you try to make the positive changes that move towards equality.
At least in theory, I like the point and the tack that you're taking here. That once a state, and if we are to respect states' rights, which is, I think, you know, Republicans, that's one of their hallmarks. That's one of the flags that they wave. And that once the state does indeed endorse marriage equality, why would you not amend, you know, some regulation in the military so that those people can then achieve true marriage equality? But we both know that states' rights are one thing in theory, yeah. They're another in practice.
Yeah, well, ideology gets in the way of a lot of things.
Yep. And hypocrisy.
It's a very necessary change because the situation we're going to have right now is, you know, legally married people serving in the military, if they're same sex, will have a spouse that doesn't have the benefits that the heterosexual married couples in the military do. And that's fundamentally unequal and unfair and a problem for the military. And they're, you know, trying to fix it in any way they can. But there are laws on the books that define spouse as between a man and a woman. And those laws must be changed for the military to be able to grant equality of benefits to all spouses.
How about, does the Defense of Marriage Act get in your way at all?
It does. That's part of what we're going after. But there are also other laws on the books, not just DOMA. There's also a bill that I'm a co-sponsor of that's prime sponsored by Congressman Jerry Nadler to repeal DOMA. DOMA is a little bit oddly worded and open to interpretation in terms of what it truly means for the federal government to only recognize heterosexual marriage. But certainly we are looking to repeal it as well.
So what about from within military circles? Are you anticipating or have you gotten a negative feedback on that? Or what is their sense of your effort right now?
Now, the Pentagon supports it and the military widely supports it. I mean, and what's happened with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I mean, and gosh, the hearings that we had to go through on all the horrific things that were going to happen once, you know, gay and lesbian people were allowed to openly serve in the military, surprise, surprise, they're not happening. You know, the military's functioning just fine. So certainly we've faced that sort of pushback. But I think what has happened since Don't Ask, Don't Tell is repealed is that sort of melted away within the military. And increasingly, even those in the military who are skeptical of this, you know, are seeing, you know, it's working just fine. So I think there is less resistance now to ideas like this law that I'm proposing than there was to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So as I fully expected, you know, we're finding out that, you know, equality works just fine.
So what have you had either formal or informal discussions with the Republicans here from the state delegation as to what they're going to consider here?
I have not. We've just introduced the bill, I think, today. We had some last-minute drafting changes that we were going through on Wednesday. So we've just introduced it. Now I'm going to begin the process of reaching out in a bipartisan way to try to get support.
Well, I'd like to be a fly on the wall for some of those conversations.
Well, if you'd been there for some of our hearings on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you'd get a painful feel for what might happen. But there are also, I think, many Republicans who are reasonable on this issue. And I'll reach out to those, and we'll see what we can do.
I really do. I think the approach that you're taking, where you're saying, look, if we have right now currently have six states in the District of Columbia that recognize same-sex marriage, and that just the inherent unfairness of taking benefits or privileges, I guess you would call them benefits, away if they are in the military, serving in the military together, that they're being deprived of the same benefits that heterosexual marriages enjoy.
A spouse is a spouse is a spouse.
Yeah.
And should be treated the same.
Do you have any sense, because I don't, of how many same-sex couples that are married are in the military?
I don't. You know, it's hard because, like you said, I mean, we've just had a few states now. It's getting to be the number of years since some of them, since Vermont and some others have had this legalized. So I'm sure there's an increasing number, but we don't have an exact count.
Yeah, that would be interesting because I think there's still some difficulty for gays and lesbians to come out, even though I'm sure most of them still feel comfortable or more comfortable given the changes that have occurred. But I'm sure that there's still kind of, you know, some waiting in the line to come out.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's legal now within the military, but many of the discriminatory actions of individuals, I mean, you can't pass a law and change that. So, yes, those are still very difficult decisions. And we're making progress, but we've still got a long way to go. So that, you know, the LGBT community can be treated equally.
Realistically,
we're taking steps.
Realistically, this being an election year, I'm going to bet you that you stand a better chance maybe next term.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think that is realistic. But the thing is, you got to get started.
Awesome.
You got to put the bill out there and move forward, and we'll try, and we'll keep trying until we get it done.
Well, good on you, and props to you, Congressman Adam Smith. Thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ken. Great to talk to you.
Good talking with you. I just think that is it's so logical as to make sense that not if this wasn't an election year, I think that this would have a better chance of just going through now. But with everything that's up for grabs in November, I think there is no way on God's great green wonderful earth that this stands a chance. But like the congressman said, you know, you got to start, you got to gather momentum, you got to be ready for it, and you got to sell it the best way. And I think that's going to mean let's look for this next year. In a moment, some problems in Tacoma with a halfway house. Some people going, why here?
Seattle's waking up to the Como Morning News 5 to 9. Right now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So there's a proposal to put a halfway house in Tacoma within about 100 yards of a Boys and Girls Club and a school. And this is a facility that right now plans are will have 5 to 10 people in it. And some of them, all of them, I don't know, could be level 2 or level 3 sex offenders. Now, level 3 sex offender is the one that's considered most likely to reoffend. So as you might well understand, people who live in the area here, not too happy with what's been put on the table. David Bonds is one of those neighbors, joins me here this afternoon on Newsline PM. Hi, David.
How you doing?
So how long has this been in the works?
We found out about it maybe about 10 days ago, 10, 11 days ago.
And that was pretty much after, because from what I understand, all the permits have already been issued. Everything's in order. And this guy who's putting this together is anticipating that this halfway house will be open sometime next month.
You know, there's mixed feelings on if the permits have been issued or not. Some reports saying he hasn't got any of the permits. Some say that he didn't have all the proper permits to remodel some of the inside of the building. So I'm not actually sure as far as all the permits goes. I know that no one in the neighborhood was informed on that was informed on that's what he had planned on doing with the house once he received the house from his sister. And the neighborhood's, you know, pretty upset about it.
Is there a requirement if a facility in a neighborhood is going to be used as a halfway house to kind of give people this opportunity to get a new start? Is there a requirement that the neighbors be notified, or is it just supposed to be slipped under the radar when people aren't looking?
You know, I don't think there's a legal requirement to notify people, but you would think that the gentleman that's opening up this house lived one block down for many years. So he knows many of the people that live in that neighborhood. You know, so it's not that he's doing this in a neighborhood he doesn't know the people. He knows a lot of people that live in that neighborhood. He knows some of the long-term neighbors that have been there. He could have easily went to someone and informed them on what he had planned on doing with the house.
Now, this guy, he's not on a mission. I mean, this is something that he's going to make money at, correct?
Yes.
So is it a lot of money? I mean, this is...
My understanding, you get about $500 per inmate, or per, I don't want to say inmate, I'm sorry.
Per person?
Per person per month. So if he's housing, you know, 10
people. That's $5,000
a month, yeah.
A month. So, and you believe that that is his motivation. This is just something that he thinks he can make a buck at, and...
I do. I understand that these houses need to be in place in certain areas. I understand that the people that are being released need a place to go. I think you need to consider where you're putting these houses when you're doing that, though. I think, you know, 100 yards from an elementary school, 100 yards from a boys and girls club, there's 3 school bus stops within 100 yards of his house. There's one on the actual corner of his house. There's one 100 yards in each direction of his house. So when you're talking about kids going to school in Tacoma in the winter, you're going to have kids standing on the corner of his house at 6 o'clock in the morning catching the bus to school.
Realistically, I'm sorry, but let me ask you that, because realistically, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, I can't imagine any neighborhood that would say, oh, okay, yeah, you can come in here, regardless of how close the school is or how close the Boys and Girls Club is. I think you'd always find at least some level of resistance to putting a halfway house in a neighborhood.
You're right, and you would. I think the other thing you would have to consider is the fact that that area, I mean, that zip code 98405 has almost 250 sex offenders in that zip code alone already. There's a list that you can get that shows you all the sex offenders and all the zip codes within the Tacoma, Pierce County area, and it's number one on the top of the list. It has 250 sex offenders in the area already.
So what are your options now? Can you go to the city council and ask for a delay on this? Can you ask them to take away the permits if they've been issued, or to deny the permits if they haven't been issued?
I think that our options are very limited. I think what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to, you know, come together as a community and make sure that we are at all the upcoming city council membership meetings, all the public city meetings. Make sure we're contacting all of our councilmen, the mayor of Tacoma, and let everybody know, you know, how we feel about this house going up in place. I mean, in that area, I think the more people that know about it, the harder it's going to be for him to comfortably open up that house.
And so your ultimate objective is to keep him from opening it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, David. I'm going to wish you luck on this one, because I think you're going to need it. I'm with you. I think particularly when you're talking about level 3 sex offenders, I think you should not have them within close proximity to a girls and boys club in a school. So good luck to you and the neighbors there, David Bonds. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, good talking with you. The problem is if the permits have already been issued, I don't know what recourse is available there. Now, if they're intervening here at a point where the permits have not been issued, that's something else entirely. Then maybe they have a shot. Hang with us here, Newsline PM.
Reporting the news, understanding the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Well, the state of Michigan has gotten itself a real unique way of dealing with drunk drivers over the 4th of July holiday. The city of, I'm looking if this is Detroit. I can't tell. But anyway, there's a city in Michigan that has purchased from Wismark, which is a Maryland outfit. It bills itself as the only company in the world to produce interactive urinal cakes. Yeah, you heard me right. Interactive urinal cakes that they put in the men's urinal. Some of them sing. Some of them have flashing lights. You know, look, I'm telling you, as a guy, I would not want to be standing at the urinal and having all of a sudden a voice begin singing from where I'm taking a leak. Nor would I want lights flashing from the urinal where I am taking a leak. But anyway, the city here, you know what I would like is a urinal cake that goes, "I'm melting! I'm melting!" Maybe I could handle that. But anyway, they've ordered these cakes that say, "Hey, listen up." That's right, I'm talking to you. Have you had a few drinks? Had a few too many? Then do yourself and everyone else a favor. Call a sober friend or a cab. And don't forget to wash your hands. So, can you imagine some drunk getting into a conversation with a voice coming from the urinal?
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Okay, here we go. Another issue in respect to the private sales of guns. Now, you know, I've been hell on wheels about this. It is an area that I think really desperately needs some attention. Because these are how we keep wondering how kids keep getting a hold of guns and how criminals keep getting a hold of guns. And a lot of it comes from people who have their weapons stolen because they leave them unsecured in their home. Or they purchase them at private gun sales where there's no background check required. Some of that, it's often referred to as the gun show loophole, which I think is a complete misnomer. Because there are some gun shows that are very rigid in terms of who they allow in, and they don't allow private sales, or they don't allow people to purchase or attend the gun show for purpose of buying a weapon unless they have, say, a concealed weapons permit. And if you have a concealed weapons permit, then you've been vetted. You've gone through a background check. But for private gun sales, it does not require one. If you were to walk into a gun store to purchase a handgun, you'd have to go through a background check. So we have this guy down in Kent who traded a TV and $50 for a gun, which he fully intended on reselling. So he hooks up with this other guy who has $600 burning a hole in his pocket, and he buys it. Now, the guy who buys the gun winds up killing a woman that he had met online. He was stalking her, and he wound up killing her. Now, that guy, who is a Canadian, has been sentenced to life in prison. The guy who sold him the gun was today sentenced to 1 year and 1 day in jail. Now, Teresa O'Rourke joins me here this afternoon on Newsline PM. She was a friend of the woman who was killed. Thank you for being here, Teresa.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, please accept my condolences. I'm sorry for your loss of the friend.
Thank you.
So you've been on top of this here simply because, you know, she was your friend, and you just could not imagine how this whole thing evolved, correct?
That is correct. And I think, Ken, when you start talking about the private seller loophole in the law, until this has happened to you, you don't think about it. And you think gun violence happens, oh, that happens to someone else. That's not an issue for me. I'm a suburban, middle-class person. Gun violence doesn't affect me until it does.
So the guy who sold the gun, that would be Benedict Ladera, correct?
Correct.
What was he charged with?
He was charged for illegal transfer of a firearm. He was only charged because Dmitry Smirnov was a Canadian citizen. Had Dmitry Smirnov been a resident of Washington State, the gun sale would have been perfectly legal.
And regardless of whatever use the gun was made, or whatever use the gun, whatever the gun was used for, would not have been coming back at Ladera.
Absolutely, and Mr. Ladera was not charged with anything in connection to the murder of Jitka Vessel, but only for the illegal transfer of a firearm to a non-citizen, to a non-Washington state resident.
And that's illegal.
That is illegal. But isn't it strange that had Dmitry Smirnov been a resident of Washington state, nothing would have happened to Ladera. Nothing.
I know. See, and here's the conundrum. The conundrum is, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Under the law, I don't know why Ladera was charged at all, because he's not required to do a background check. How would he then be required to know that Smirnov was a Canadian citizen?
Well, the reason why Mr. Ladera was convicted, well, and pled guilty, is because Mr. Ladera knew that Dmitry Smirnov was a Canadian citizen.
Ah.
Mr. Smirnov paid an extra $200 to purchase that weapon. The original cost was $400.
Did he get a discount for the Canadian currency?
No. Well, no, he got an upcharge for being a Canadian citizen.
I was being a smartass. I was being a smartass.
I can't understand how we don't require background checks on all gun sales.
And I'm with you. I am so totally with you. And I've talked to people, and my sense of what is required would be that, because the individual citizen hasn't got the capability of doing a background check, but you should have to pay an additional fee and go to a licensed gun dealer, go to a gun store where they have the ability to do those background checks and to initiate them. Pay that fee to the commercial gun seller and use that as the background check for the person who's buying the gun.
And Ken, a lot of states already have that.
Yes, some do.
It's just making it national. We already have the Brady law, which does require background checks on all federally licensed gun dealers. But this huge private seller loophole you can drive five trucks through, and 40% of all guns sold today are sold through private transactions. Online sales, garage sales, sometimes flea markets, gun shows.
Well, this guy bought it through, he got a hold of Ladera through armslist.com, correct?
Correct. Which is essentially a site just, to advertise, hey, here's a great way to exploit a loophole and for criminals to buy guns.
See, I think the insanity of this, and just in the way of background, Teresa, are you from the area here?
I'm not. I'm from Chicago.
Okay. So we have had, in the past several months, we had a third-grade student in Bremerton shot in her classroom because one of her classmates brought a gun to school.
I'm very familiar with that story, and it's my understanding that both of this child's parents that he lived with, where he got the gun, were felons.
Right, and I think the guy was not a felon. The boy's mother was a felon.
Okay.
So, but regardless, you had that instance. You had an instance in which a Marysville police officer left his private weapon unsecured in a van, and that was picked up by a child and who wound up killing his sister. There was another incident with a kid bringing a gun to school. I mean, and so we look back, and my mantra has become follow the gun. Where did the criminal? These criminals are not walking into legitimate gun stores to purchase their weapons. They are getting them out of the trunk of a car that's parked on a corner somewhere, and that person either got it in a private sale or they got it from a home where the gun owner was irresponsible and didn't have that gun locked up when it wasn't on his or her person. So what I'm advocating here, I think we need to have gun owners, handgun owners should be required to have a safe. That's number one. And number two, every private gun sale should also be subjected to a background check, period. I'm with you on this.
I'm glad to hear it. And I hope by speaking with you today and speaking with your audience, they can really learn about the seriousness of this issue. I'm certainly not here to say nobody should own a gun. I'm just saying if you want to own, with rights come responsibilities.
Yep.
Yes, you have the right to own a gun. in the United States. I have no problem with that. But I also have the right to vote. I have to register to vote. How come you don't have to do a background check to own a gun?
I am so spot on with you, and I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this today. Thank you, Teresa.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your time very much, and I just want to just real quick, for people who want to make a difference and really help be able to pass a national background check, I really urge you to write to your mayors, because all politics is local, and urge them to join Mayors Against Illegal Guns.
I'm with you. All right. Thank you, Teresa O'Rourke. I appreciate the time.
Have a great day.
All right. Newsline PM continues.
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So last December, the Seattle City Council adopted a ban on plastic bags. And also said, and by the way, if you're going to use paper, the paper bags will cost you a nickel apiece. And the whole point of this, and the council was put onto this by environmental groups who said, hey, you know, look, we use almost 300 million plastic bags a year. And very few of that number are recycled. And so in order to just be better stewards of the environment, we really should step forward, step up, and ban the use of plastic bags. I have no problem with that. I really don't, although I am a voracious reuser of the plastic bags. I have no problem with that. My big issue, though, my major bone of contention here is going to be charged a nickel if I don't bring some type of, cloth petri dish to the supermarket to put my groceries in there. I'm going to start bringing, it's going to be like Costco. I'm going to start walking in with cardboard boxes. Just say, throw them in here. I'll just take the cart home. I'll just tie it to the back of my car and tow that little puppy home. Rob Crable is the Program Associate for Environment Washington, joins me here on Newsline PM. By the way, the plastic bag ban that was passed in December starts on Monday. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
I'm doing all right, but you know I got a burr under my butt here.
I do know that.
So let's get right to it. Why did you have to stick the nickel a bag on there?
Well, you know, Ken, the main problem that Environment Washington has with the plastic bag is with the plastic bags, and not so much the paper bags. And, you know, you pointed out the issues with the plastic bags and how they can impact our wildlife and how we just use way too many of them. Where the nickel came from was actually a discussion that we had with grocery store owners and business owners who said, you know, the paper bags are a little bit more expensive, and our ultimate goal is really to move people towards reusable bags. So they said, let's keep the paper bags in the store, but let's make sure that people are paying for the cost of using that product so that they can, so that we can recover some of our costs and encourage people to bring their reusable bags.
And you bought that? Man, I got some land for you in Florida, pal. I got some waterfront property I'm going to sell you in Florida. You bought into the supermarkets going, well, the paper bag. You know, for generations, the mm-hmm. paper bags were offered at the checkout without any plastic, and it seemed as if the supermarkets were doing pretty damn well with their profit at that point for, you know, decades and decades and decades.
You know, Ken, that's something that you'd have to talk with the grocery stores about.
Oh, no. You guys were the ones that pushed this. No, you're not going to foster this off.
Well, you know, this is the conversation that we had with them, and we wanted to work with businesses and make sure that we were coming up with a solution that worked for all parties, and this was something that was brought to the table, that was something that we didn't have a big problem with when we were doing outreach and talking with people about this. A lot of people seemed to understand and actually support the nickel fee, and it wasn't something that we found that was very contentious.
I'll tell you what, give those people my name, and every month they can send me $1.50, and that'll pay for my paper bags for a month.
All right, well, I'll let them know that. But, you know, Ken, like you were saying, is that you would bring in your cardboard boxes and things like that. You know, and I know that you have a little bit of a beef with the reusable bags, but a lot of people are starting to wash their bags, clean them out, just bring those back to the store, and it's completely scotch-free for you.
See, and that's just what we needed, is one more extra step that we have to take to use some kind of antiseptic, sudsy soap and hot water to rinse out, 15 grocery bags for a family of five. But let me ask you this. Here's what I wonder. Why aren't we going after the supermarkets and the manufacturers of soda pop for those plastic things that they wrap them in, those plastic carriers? You know what I'm talking about.
Yep, I do know what you're talking about. And, Ken, there are a lot of plastic items out there in the world that we really need to address and that we really need to figure out, how can we use less plastic, especially plastic items that are a one-and-done sort of thing. So there are a lot of challenges with those, various different things.
I think you should have gone over after those before you went after prior to going after plastic bags. I think they cause more damage to the environment. You see more birds with those things wrapped around their neck, more fish in those little plastic circles that they can't get off. I think there's far more damage to the environment from those dipsy things than the plastic bags that people would reuse to scoop up their dog poop. But anyway,
those rings definitely have their own environmental costs. I don't know which one is worse. They're both pretty bad in my mind. So we'll probably be going after those within the future.
All right. You can count on me for that one. Rob Crable, Program Associate with Environment Washington. Thanks for putting up with me.
Thank you, Ken.
All right. Take care. Hang with us here.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Again, as a reminder, that plastic bag ban begins Sunday? Yeah, 30 days has September, April, June, and November. Yeah, 30 days in June. So this takes effect July 1st. And it's just so you know. Another airline story. American Eagle. I've never heard of this airline. It must be Eastern. Because this was a flight that was going from Raleigh, Durham to LaGuardia in New York. And there had been some refueling delays. There had been rain. People had to get off the plane and on the plane. And it was, about 5 hours late. So now they're putting people back on the plane, and as they're getting back on the plane, they're muttering to themselves, probably some of those words that George Carlin said you can't use on radio or television. Anyway, it ticked off one of the flight attendants who grabbed the mic and said, "Hey, if you don't like it, get off the damn plane. If you got the gonads, get out of here." And so a bunch of people did. They wound up canceling the flight, and they blamed it on the passengers. I'm thinking, why don't you go after your flight attendant who decided he was going to chastise people for, some understandable profanity? Hang with us in a moment, where you can buy your booze cheap.